Welcome back to Rome Boys. On this episode, we've got an interview with Mark Hart.
What? The physician? No, the musician.
Yeah.
No, not the musician. Right. Even better.
Yep.
Are you a musician?
I play the drums. I switched to drums when I was in elementary school because I thought drummers got the girls. They don't. They did not. By the way, if anybody was scoring at home, that's okay.
Nice.
Nice to keep in mind that one. You know. Isn't your son learning to play the drums?
But he's thinking about the priesthood, so it works out great.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, a little bit about Mark.
Yeah.
Mark serves as the Chief Information Officer and Executive Vice President at Life Teen, a Catholic youth ministry movement currently being implemented in 1,800 parishes in 30 countries worldwide. A graduate of the University of Notre Dame, Mark is a best-selling author of a dozen books, including Our Not Quite Holy Family. He is a popular speaker and Sirius XM radio host. His widely popular DVD series, Alteration, Encounter, and T3 are currently utilized in homes, youth groups, and classrooms across the globe. Mark and his wife, Melanie, have three daughters, Hope, Trinity, and Faith, and one son, Josiah. They live in Phoenix, Arizona. So you live in the desert like us.
I sure do. Yeah. But we don't have that glorious thing you all call humidity. I just don't know how you do it. So if you can live on the surface of the sun, come west.
So it's 88 degrees here today.
Is it really?
March. Wow. Yeah, we're recording this March 26th.
Yeah, so right. 88 degrees.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful
not a,
day.
Not a bad winter.
Except for the wind blowing about 40 miles an hour. We can do without that.
Yeah.
So, not too shabby, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
trying not to.
Well, tell us some funny stories from right all your years of working with youth and young adults. I mean, you can spend the whole episode if you want to, so just go.
We'll sit back and we'll just listen.
Random funny stories from your ministry.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, gosh, there's so many come to mind.
Yeah, please go.
I was trying to think. So Life Teen, we own a couple of camps up in North Georgia, and we also leased some camps. We went out in Texas and we put on summer camps. Before COVID, we'd have 4,000 or 5,000 teenagers come through our camps in the course of the summer. We have middle school camps, we have high school camps, and I would go out when I was a little younger and I'd go out and I'd host a week of camp, right? So you get a couple hundred kids there, a bunch of different parishes, and it's great. It's like during the daytime you're doing high ropes courses, or you're whitewater rafting, or you're canoeing. Messy games, messy Olympics, and then at night you have sessions. You'll have Holy Mass, you'll have adoration, you have different sessions, confession on different topics. And there was one year I went out, and we'll have groups of nuns come out. We always have priests there, obviously, for the sacraments, but we like to model vocations, the religious life, priesthood, to all the teens. So we'll bring in priests and nuns who just love being priests and nuns. Do you know what I mean? Put them around teens, and it's just contagious. All of a sudden, you got young guys going, wow, like priesthood, that's a potential, that's a viable option for me. Mm-hmm. You have young ladies. Wow, look at how much joy these sisters have. Well, it was one year we had this obstacle course. It was a mud obstacle course. And messy Olympics. So, I mean, you're out there and you got shaving cream and, you're throwing, cereal on kids and oatmeal. I mean, it's great. And you watch these teams in the suburbs just let loose. You know what I mean? Like out in nature, there's no screens. Mm. Everyone's just having fun. Everyone's a filthy mess, and you kind of liken the filth and then you kind of go get clean. And that usually precedes a session, for instance, on confession. You know what I mean? How sin is sort of like that mess. But when you go to confession, you just make clean, how good it feels. Well, we're out there. And there was this beautiful little Carmelite nuns there this week. And none of the teens wanted to get the nuns dirty because they're just these cute little nuns, right? It's no big deal.
Sure.
And then finally, one of the nuns just goes over and takes this bucket of oatmeal and just douses these kids with it. Well, now it's on. Right? Oh. I mean, they're in full habit. And you got kids, and they're throwing stuff at the nuns, like a food fight. Nuns are throwing stuff back. And before you know it, there's this one nun, and she's just covered like in oats and like it was gray mud. And so it's a obstacle course, and it's like the nuns team versus like this team from the kids actually from Texas, ironically.
Nah,
of course. And it's the end of the obstacle course, and there's a kid, and I mean, and y'all take, you know, Friday Night Lights. I mean, football, you guys take it seriously down there.
Oh yeah.
And there's this kid, and I'm telling you, he must have played linebacker. I mean, he was easily 220. I mean, he's a big, strong kid, right? And he's at the last leg of this obstacle course race, so he's having to run through the obstacle course and like go get the flag. And one of these Carmelite nuns, she was not going to have it, man. So she goes out into the mud, and as this kid's coming at her, she runs over, like dives down into the mud, just takes out his legs, and just, he sends him flying. I mean, like up in the air. I mean, it was like fumble. I mean, she got this linebacker so fast, got up, stole that flag, went on. She won the thing for everybody. She must have been like in her mid 30s. It was the best. Oh, wow. I'll tell you something. And when it was all done, she went and collapsed in the mud. He collapsed after, and we just sat there. I mean, there was 200 of us. We just laughed until we cried.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so counterintuitive. Here's like this high school football stud. I'm gonna win it for my team, and here comes this little. You never mess with a nun.
No,
yeah, not all habits are bad.
Yeah,
not all habits are bad.
Talk about painting a great picture.
I could tell you just, I mean, so many amazing stories of just teens having the most powerful, like most. I was doing a Steubenville conference, a Life Teen Steubenville conference one time, and we're in this huge, huge convention center venue. And there's easily 4,000 teens in there. And I was doing the Saturday night talk before we had adoration. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. There was like this moment where the priest comes out with the monstrance, and it's the music had stopped. It was just dead silence. And the priest, you could hear a pin drop. 4,000 teenagers, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And the priest, he said, any teens, like, any of you who want to make a profession of faith to the Lord tonight, that you want to turn your life around, you want to walk with him, I invite you to come forward and kneel before the monstrance. And this is like late in the weekend. Most of the teens had already kind of, you know, done that. There had been a confession. Well, the priest calls the kids forward. These kids come forward, you know, on their own timetable. And it's to happen about 45 minutes. And finally, the priest sends everybody back. And he's like, okay. He's like, now we're going to go into benediction. We're going to repose the blessed sacrament. And all of a sudden, you hear this kid scream from the back of the room through like a teary, like quivering voice, "Father, don't put Jesus away yet." And this kid comes running. I mean, running. Oh. It felt like it was a quarter of a mile away. But what was so cool was, he was running. He was just sobbing, but he was running through a sea of, you know, 4,000 peers, and he's running forward and running forward, and he falls on his knees before the monstrance and just starts weeping.
Wow.
And puts his hands in the air, and he just says, "Jesus Christ, you are my Lord and Savior, and I give you my life." It was the most amazing testimony, and it shamed and indicted every adult in that room, myself included, because that night, that kid worship the Lord with total abandon. And he did it in front of God and man and all of his peers. But I'll never forget it, though, in this moment of dead silence, like, "Father, don't put Jesus away yet." I mean, like, it was so powerful. It was like more powerful than any talk I've ever given. I know that for sure. I mean, it was a moment that'll stay with me until the Lord calls me home.
Absolutely.
That's an amazing story.
Well, did they put Jesus away?
I tell you what, I think he elevated every heart in the room. We worshiped for about another 30 minutes that night. We were all, everybody got home late that night. You know? But it was worth it.
Praise God.
Absolutely.
Amen to that. Wow. That's really cool.
And on the nun tackle story, that's one tough mutter.
Sorry. She's a blessed mutter. She's
a blessed mutter. Blessed mutter.
Couldn't help myself.
Yeah. Good one. Well, we really enjoyed the book. I have a funny story about your book.
I think we all
had it on my nightstand. The one I'm talking about is our family, not quite holy. I had it on my nightstand, and my 14-year-old picked it up, my 14-year-old daughter. She's like, "Oh, I love Mark Hart." She opened it up, read the first paragraph, and was like, "Okay." And she put it back down.
It's an attention getter, that's for sure.
Oh, I remember the first paragraph, too. That's not for the faint of heart. It's not
The very first sentence, she was like, "Hey, is this really Mark Hart?" She read the second sentence, and she was like, "Oh, okay, this is all right." I'm not going to spoil it, so y'all got to read the book to find out what I'm talking about.
And Chris,
it's funny, is most people never read the introduction to a book. And I was like, you know what? Whenever I read an introduction, I always want to put something in there just for the person that actually had the wherewithal to read it.
There you go.
That's a gift.
So that's my life. It's Monday, you know, every week. We have our hour, adoration hour. And we're in front of the Blessed Sacrament. It's just the two of us, peaceful, quiet. I bring the book in. My wife is like, "I want to read it." So I was like, "Yeah, sure."
In adoration,
it's just as quiet as can be, and she opens the book, and I think she probably spit out her dentures. It's just, I mean, she was like literally like, oh my gosh, that's the funniest thing I've ever read in my life. Ooh, and she just said, what? What's going on?
After you read that, you're just like, okay, I have to finish this.
The cool part is that wasn't the only, the first line is not the only greatness in the book.
Oh, like, no.
She's like, can I go read my book, please? Yes.
Well, every story in that book is true. And, you know, it was funny when they approached Monad to do the book, we initially said no, because, you know, we've done a couple other things, usually for couples, like little mini Bible studies and other booklets, things like that. Because we couldn't find anything as a couple that would help us, you know, have discussions leading to prayer that wasn't just written by like a counselor or a psychologist, you know,
right,
or a celibate. And I mean, there's great books by you know, Three to Get Married by Fulton Sheen.
Yeah, he's up, man.
One of the greatest books ever written, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I think there's something different when it's a couple talking to a couple, because you know what the cross is like on Tuesday and on Thursday and on Saturday, and the kids and the stress and the money. And, you know, so we had originally said no. And I told the publisher, I said, you know, everything's been written, you know, about marriage. Like, there's just everything out there. I mean, it's from psychologists to counselors to therapists to couples, far holier. I said, you know, I don't think that we're being called to do that. And the publisher said, just pray about it. So we went, and I'll never forget this. We went on a long walk, came home, had some prayer time, poured a glass of wine, we were talking, and they just said, what would we share? And what's funny was, it just came out, we started telling stories. We were like, well, we'd share this failure and this mistake and that mistake. And all of a sudden it was like, you know what, maybe we should do this, because I think there's a lot of Catholic couples out there who feel this pressure that they have to have like the perfect Christmas card family, that they have to be like 10 minutes early to Mass, that all the kids have to know how to pray all the prayers backwards in Latin, you know, up ways and down ways, that, you know, that everybody has to be just, you know, perfect. And there's this pressure, because you look around, I think sometimes as a Catholic family, you go, that family has it all together, and that family has all together, and what's the matter with us, you know, and our house is a mess, and our kids are hormonal or whatever. And I think that we sat down and just said, you know what, I said, let's just share our mess. Let's share our mistakes. Let's share some funny moments along the way, but let's just maybe take a look at this from a different angle, you know, and just help families maybe who are feeling like they're failures and have a new perspective. Mm-hmm. Families who are doing okay, do better. And families who are doing great, feel even better about themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so right.
Maybe that can hopefully happen.
And you're just being real with this, and it gives us hope, because we're like, okay, yes, the house is a mess right now. Yeah. Kids are crazy. Homework's not done. Wife, whatever else. And so that does give us hope. So thank you for writing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like it kind of crosses the, you know, our slogan is be real, be bold, be Catholic. Mm-hmm. And being real is a big part of that.
Yes.
And it's who we are. And so I think it helps people who may not be close to their faith realize that there's not this big, great, unattainable goal to be perfect. Mm-hmm. But look, we're just normal people too.
Yeah, we're human.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's funny? You know what's funny is, you know, We call it the Holy Family, not the Perfect Family, you know, for a reason. You know, Saint Joseph, as close to perfect as you can get.
Yeah.
You know, second greatest saint, but still not perfect. You know?
Right.
And how humbling it must have been to be Saint Joseph. And I'll just say this, like, you know, dad to dads. Like, I mean, imagine here you are. You're married to the Immaculate Conception,
yes,
who's never sinned. She's literally Mrs. Right. And you're trying to raise God at the same time, okay? Talk about a brother who was so aware of his own sin.
Yes.
I mean, every minute of the day, he had to come face to face with his own imperfection and sin. But that's to be hope for all of us. You know what I mean? Like, I look at dads and husbands all the time and be like, look, you're called to be the spiritual head. You know, that's what St. Paul says. But it doesn't mean that you're necessarily holier than your wife. I mean, if that's the case, the Holy Family is a terrible example of that, because St. Joseph was not holier than Mary, but he was still called to be the spiritual head, you know? And we all have this different role to play, right? The spiritual head and the spiritual heart. And the two are complementary, but they are distinct and they are different. And that's why we have to, you know, it's like any successful team, you have to know what position you're playing.
Right.
And if you stay in your position and you stick to the game plan, good things are going to happen.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it like that, Joseph being in that predicament makes me feel like when I'm at my in-laws' house. No, I'm kidding.
For the saint of humility, right? Gosh, I mean, like, he's constantly getting doses of humility.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah,
actually, and what a great point to make in the year of Saint Joseph. So thanks for that.
Boom!
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why they call them the terror demons, man.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. We just got through. We had an interview with Father Calloway not too long ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a good friend.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He's, He's a gift. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, a lot of the folks who watched that episode just talked about how real he is. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of opened them up to, you know, what he's got to offer. And, it's been great.
Callaway's he's a great dude. We were speaking at a men's conference together right before COVID, you know, unleashed. Yeah. Back when we were all still traveling, a lot of travel and stuff. And we sat backstage. And even before he gave his talks on St. Joseph, he handed me a copy of his book. And I mean, I'd done the consecration to Mary, like Louis de Montfort's consecration to Mary. Yeah. I'd done Father Gately's book, you know, 33 Days of Morning Glory. So I was accustomed to that. I'd never heard of a consecration of St. Joseph before. And I made the mistake of asking Callaway, I'm like, so what turned this on in you? And boy, the floodgates opened. He was so passionate. I mean, we've known each other for a long time, but I've not seen him. He's got so much energy in his step right now. He's so passionate about the St. Joseph project he's been working on. It's just, he's a gift to the church. It's great.
No, he's very, very busy, and he's really good at what he's doing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and what a blessing he was.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Yeah, it is. He's with us.
He's still with us, yeah.
But, yeah, really, for all those points to come out, like, concepts and I would never even have thought of, right? Like, who are you? This is fantastic.
It's like, how do you
for the man who never said a word?
Exactly. Right? That's what one of the questions was to him, is how did you get so much material on a person who never said anything?
Maybe that's the secret, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, you guys know it's his husbands. I mean, you know why he didn't say anything? Because he was smart.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You lose God, right. For 3 days, and she's just like, Joseph, he's like,
it doesn't take long to say, okay.
That's great.
He could have said something, but he was going to give himself a lot of trouble.
My favorite advice to give married couples is, when a man gets married, he has one choice, whether to be right or happy.
That just boils down. Yeah, just got to choose. Right? Just got to choose. I told my wife, the other night, I said, baby, you don't realize, like, I didn't even realize I was wrong until I got married. I mean, I didn't think I was ever wrong before. You know? And that wasn't even a slam. I'm like, thank you. For what a moron I was for so long.
From teen to understanding.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Very good. Like, speaking of, nice segue into that. We have a few teenagers in our group. We have 18 kids collectively. And
boom.
Yeah, we have a few teenagers and some coming up pretty quick to be teenagers. So what's... how do you understand the mind of a teenager these days? Because we're not growing up in the same world that we grew up in.
It's a trick question.
No, we're not. And honestly, that's a great question. I've been working in youth ministry for 26 and a half years now. So I spent a lot of time with teens and young adults. I'm not included. But right now, I have college, high school, middle school, and elementary school all in my house.
Wow.
Okay. So I stupidly thought, and I don't know if you guys ever thought this, like, before I had kids, I'm like, you know, you have a parenting philosophy, you and your wife are on the same page, and then you just said, you use that philosophy. And then the craziest thing happens. You start having kids who have different personalities, different needs, and you have to parent them differently. You
know? Yeah.
same end goal, but different philosophy, right? Different strategy. I'd say a few things. One, the average attention span of a teenager, and this is statistically accurate, this is true, is 7.1 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
The attention span of a goldfish is 8.3. This has been studied. Okay. And I think what's hard is, and this is not, it's not to be a slam, because, like, you know, a lot of our kids, no matter how good we are as parents with terms of, like, screen limits and navigation and stuff, they're still learning from screens. And this is even before the pandemic, you know, like, they're able to, the good news of that is that iGen or Gen Z, you know, this current, you know, culture of teenagers, they're able to interpolate knowledge at a rate almost 4 to 5 times faster than any of us, like in Gen X, you know, or any baby boomers, anybody who came before them, even faster than millennials. Teenagers can interpolate this because they've been raised with screens and they've learned how to navigate them. You've probably seen, like, you know, maybe you or your wife, you can't figure out the remote, you can't figure out how to get on the thing, and you have like a 3 or 4 year old walk up, take the tablet, boom, 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 and hand it back to you. It's very humbling, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But truthfully, like, that's a good thing for them, is they can take in so much amount of content and knowledge so quickly. The bad news is that it is creating increasing difficulty in terms of social ineptitude, in terms of the next generation being able to carry on a conversation, make eye contact. Mm-hmm. And even if your kids are really superior at it, chances are some of their friends aren't, or you'll witness this in some of your peers' kids where they're constantly on their screen, or they're unable to carry on a conversation. I think what's important to realize is that it is not – a slam or a slight on you as a parent necessarily or as an adult. It's just, this is the world they've always known. If I said to you guys, Boston, Kansas, Alabama, those are bands. I say Boston, Kansas, Alabama to Gen Z, those are places. Mm. They're not bands, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a world. I mean, my daughter, we were cleaning out the playroom a couple years back. She came in. She's about 8 or 9 at the time, and she's holding a VHS tape, and she says, "What is this?" And I said, "Well, this is what happened before DVDs." And she says, "What's a DVD?" I'm like, "Okay." Oh, and then, and then she says, "What is it?" She says, "What does it mean to rewind?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay, let's rewind, babe." But it reminded me that, you know what, like that the world that I live in is not the world they live in. Like this is the first truly post-Christian culture in America we ever lived in. A post-Christian society. This is a world that does not remember 9/11. Our teenagers do not remember 9/11, right? And if you stop and think, like, they've always known a world of terrorism. They've always known a world of heightened security at the airports, right? They've lived through a recession. I mean, like, but they didn't understand it. I mean, like their worldview, their life experience is so much is more drastically different than ours was. And to try and keep that in mind, try and bear in mind that if they can't make eye contact, it's not necessarily their fault or the fault of our parenting. But what ends up happening is, as parents, we get a little reactive and we start to think, oh, well, they're not respecting me, or they're not paying attention, or they don't really care what I have to say. But nothing could be further from the truth. What we have to do as parents, and I say this in quotes, is get better at wasting time with our kids, especially our teenagers. Obviously, it's never a waste of time to spend time with our kids.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, especially we got a lot of kids running around, a lot of activities, a lot of things going on, our conversations aren't really dialogues, they're monologues. They become what you need to know. Like, I need you to clean your room. I need you to finish your homework. I need you to do X and Y and Z, go help your mother. But it becomes more of a monologue of what I have to say and what you have to understand than it is a dialogue. And I think that we as parents, even as, you know, I'm Gen X, we're conditioned for this. How many times has someone called you on the phone? Caller ID took all the fun out of life. Remember when we were young, there was no caller ID. It was always a mystery who was there, right? But someone calls you, and you look at the phone, and you're like, oh, not talking to that person right now. I don't have 2 hours to waste, you know? So what do? We press no on the call, and then what do? We text, right? I'll text you back. Or when you could get into a conversation, you still text. Why? Because you don't love the person? No, because it's really more important about what I have to tell you than what you have to tell me. That's what we're basically telling them, right?
Oh.
And then we went from calling to texting, went from texting to emojis, right? So now we're not even texting, we're now going to just use emojis. But it kind of shows how we're all being desensitized to this, how being present really is a challenge no matter what our age is, because we're all becoming more screen obsessed. We're all becoming, you know, more affected by technology. You know, so unless we are really methodical as adults, as parents, in terms of getting away from the screens, putting those away, making eye contact. And when I say wasting time, falling down on the couch next to your kid, and instead of, like, you know, you say your kid's watching a show that isn't bad, but you're not necessarily a fan of, right? That you really don't necessarily want them watching. Instead of condemning that or explaining to them why it's dumb, to be able to sit down and start to ask questions. Because for most of our teenagers, no one asks them questions. Their teachers don't usually ask them questions unless, or the teen fears of being graded for it. A coach doesn't really ask him questions because coaches don't want feedback. A boss doesn't ask him questions because they're just the teenage worker. And a lot of times, if the parents, if we're too busy and we're, like, you know, just running around like, with, you know, chicken with their head cut off, if we're not asking them questions, then really the only time they ask questions is when they're talking to their friends. But if you go back to the Gospels, what does Jesus do? Mm-hmm. He asks people questions. What is the first thing he does on the road to Emmaus? He doesn't tell them, you know, hey, don't be freaked out, don't be downcast. He asks questions. What's been going on in Jerusalem? What happened? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What happens when you sit with the Samaritan woman at the well? He asks her questions. The man born blind? Ask some questions. Rich young man? Ask some questions. St. Paul, what's the first thing he does any place he goes? He gets into debate and he asks questions, right? Get to know where they're at. Get to know where they're at mentally, spiritually. We do the same thing with our kids. We have to balance the God talk, the church talk, and the non-God talk, the non-church talk. We have to be able to collapse next to them on the couch, sit across them on the counter in the kitchen, ask them questions about how they're doing. Not those probing questions about, were you with your friend, and what is your friend do this, and your friend, not those, and not, is your homework done, and is your room clean, but ask them questions about, like, you know, like, why are you watching this? Why do you like this show so much? Why is this funny? Okay, that is kind of fun. You know, okay, so can we as dads, can we as parents say, I can name my kid's favorite, not just their favorite color or their favorite, you know, music artist. I can name their favorite book. I can name their favorite teacher. If they're younger, I can name their favorite stuffed animal. I can name their favorite, you know, like, we have their favorite movie. I can name their biggest fear. I can name what they need prayers for most right now. Those all come out of those just general conversations on a mundane Tuesday or a stressful Thursday, you know, but those only happen when we as parents are intentional about it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put away my screen in the drawer. I'm going to go sit down next to them. I'm just going to enter into their life for a while, because that's what the incarnation was. Mm-hmm. It was God entering into his children's lives in a tangible, physical way. We didn't have to, like the Old Testament, wonder what God was thinking, you know, like try to find God. No, like he was there. We could see him. We could hear him. We could touch him, you know, and that presence in the eternal presence of the Eucharist, that's really the greatest challenge for us in the modern age as parents. So when we talk about how do we break through to a modern teenager? Well, one, to realize that they're different. They're raised differently, and they have a lot that, you know, and honestly, like they have a lot more being thrown at them than was ever thrown at us. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the age compression that's happened, teenagers, our preteens are being exposed to things and challenged with things that we didn't see until we were in college. Mm-hmm. Most of us, right? They have accessibility to things we never had accessibility to, that we're not handing them phones. We're handing them computers that also happen to make phone calls. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So they're having to wade through this, the grossness of culture, also the beauty of culture, peer pressure. Like it used to be like, hey, you know, our home is a safe place. Well, now because of social media, kids can be bullied in the sanctity of their own bedroom, right? Mm. That their peers, I mean, there's between the confusion that's going on, just that was already going on in the world before the pandemic, all the social unrest, all the gender questions and gender dysphoria, everything that's going on with their peers around them, they're being told constantly how to think, but not taught how to think.
Mm. Right.
And that's only really seen and taught and caught through the everyday conversations with mom and dad. That the reality is our kids are going to learn about sex from somebody. Mm-hmm. They're going to learn about, you know, about relationships from somebody. The question is, who do we want that to be?
Right.
Do we want that to be Cardi B and some other music artist, or mm-hmm. do we want them to find that stuff out from us?
Us. Yeah.
No, that's great.
Exactly.
Points.
So that's why I think, like, yeah, how do we, there's this fallacy that, like, oh, teens don't want to spend time with their parents. I can say after 26 years, that is a load. That is a crock. Teens mm-hmm. do want to spend time with their parents. Yeah. But they want to spend time with the parents who want to be parents.
Right.
The parents who try really hard to be friends with their teens and be cool with their teens. Once those teens are young adults, you watch and you've seen them, I'm sure. They're not friends anymore.
Right.
Yeah. They have no relationship. The parents who draw lines and parameters, but who offer respect before expecting it, who enter into their teenage kids' lives and show interest, like genuine interest in who they are as a person, not just something they want done. Those are the relationships that continue to build, the trust continues to get fostered, and the ones as they get into young adulthood, you know, they're not rolling their eyes when mom and dad call. Mm. They're calling mom and dad because they're anxious to go to them and seek wisdom and have conversations.
So I feel like if you send me an invoice right now, I'll pay it. So I just got everything
that
I needed.
That was a boatload of wisdom.
So honestly, while you're sitting there talking, I'm thinking, like, what is it where do you go? You know, is it outside on your favorite chair under an oak tree? Just like, yeah, I see this man like thinking you just golly. I mean, obviously you do this every day, right? This is part mm-hmm. of your daily routine. You're thinking about how you can connect with people who need to hear the gospel wherever they are, mm-hmm. is what it sounds like to me.
Well, I like the point that you made of where we detach from our life and kind of inject ourselves into our kids' lives, our teenagers' mm-hmm. lives. Yeah. You know, why do we watch sports? Why do we watch movies? Mm-hmm. We detach ourselves from our own lives for a little while just to turn ourselves off.
Mindless.
And turn our minds off for a little while. So why not put ourselves into our
wrong with
kids'
that,
lives?
Right?
Yeah. And we need to detach. Gosh, God commands that we detach. That's mm-hmm. what the Sabbath is about.
Right.
But
yeah.
I think what is happening is a lot of families, you know, a lot of Catholic families, and I did this for years, I would honor the Sabbath. I'd check the box like, yep, I took my kids to Mass, which is great, which is more than a lot of people do. But that wasn't what God's plan was.
Yeah.
God's plan was that, look, Sundays aren't for landscaping and mowing. They're not for grocery shopping. They're not for cleaning the whole house. They're not even for driving all over the state to tournaments, you know, even though it has to happen sometimes.
Yeah.
No, Sundays are for you to worship me and for you all to reconnect and commune. Mm-hmm. Sundays are for families to have meals. Sundays are for families to collapse on the couch and watch a game together.
Yeah,
Sundays are for families to, you know, to do whatever, but to do it together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if we entered into Sundays the right way, we wouldn't call Mondays Mondays.
Yeah.
The problem is we stay so busy on Sundays that we like fall into Monday. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, it's Monday again.
Right.
But if we were doing what God commanded, and we really, God's commanding us to rest. That's probably the second. That's probably the commandment that's broken the second most. Mm. Okay, the first one is we don't love God with all our heart, mind, soul,
right.
and strength.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the second one that we break the most, I think, is honoring the Sabbath.
Mm. What kind of society do we live in that we have to be told to rest?
Right, that's and crazy. We still don't do it. We obey dry clean only more than we obey honor the Sabbath. It makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Priorities, right?
This has actually been hitting me. I've been hearing this a couple of times recently, just in our RCA program on Thursday, just a few days ago, or yesterday. Whoa, man, too busy. See, too busy. But goodness gracious, to really bring home that spending time with your family on Sunday, just mm-hmm. not mowing the yard, not doing all those things. It's not just another weekend day. It's actually the beginning of the week.
Right. Right.
Sure. That was actually one of the things that we wrote in the book was, you know, how do we go to turning our home into a domestic church? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we heard right. also about the domestic church. The Pope's John Paul II talked about it. Benedict XVI talked about it. Francis talks about it. How you turn your home into a domestic church? And you know, Mel's and my like what we kind of had to learn and safeguard over the years. We had to kind of start. We called it Take Back Sundays, right? Because we found ourselves running around and running every direction. And we were just checking the box, but we weren't really entering into relationship with each other, with the kids. So we kind of looked at our home. We said, is this a domestic church? We're not very good cooks. We use like the smoke alarm, like an oven timer. So the dining room wasn't the most important like room for us.
Yeah.
So we actually converted our dining room into like a prayer space where, you know, it was like, hey, you can come in here, you can read and come in here and have, you know, conversation. But in here, we bring it down a notch. There's no screens. Okay. We're just going to be together. And, when we started praying and getting intentional about it, we started looking around our house and, you know, at every church, you know, it's so funny. We tell couples they can't get married on an ocean bluff overlooking the ocean. People are like, oh, does the Catholic Church hate nature? No, the Catholic Church loves nature. But the Catholic Church, unlike a lot of other denominations, understands something very important. And that is that if this marriage is going to work and you're going to build it on Christ, you have to understand sacrifice. So once you get married in a church in front of an altar of what? An altar of sacrifice. Mm. So that's why in the book, we're trying to say every home has, in my opinion, in our opinion, three altars, the dinner table, the coffee table, and the marriage bed. Mm. And if we can keep those three spaces sacred, mm-hmm. if we can go into those spaces with a mindset of self-sacrifice, then you know what? Like if we keep the dinner table sacred and we eat together like we're supposed to, we prep the meal together, we eat together, we clean up the meal together, which is an important part that gets overlooked. But if we do that and we look at the space and it's, yeah, I know it's busy. This person's got practice. This kid's got rehearsal. They got homework. They got two. I know. And maybe that means a couple nights a week you have to eat at 9 or 10 o'clock if your family's going to eat together. Who cares? At least we're together because that's where like lives are shared, right? The coffee table, instead of just a place to hold the remotes while we're looking for something to watch on Netflix, to say no. We're actually going to have conversation. This is where we invite our other families over, other people in the community. This is where we sit and we share our woes. This is where we sit and pray before the kids go off to bed, whatever. But I mean, to keep that space sacred. The marriage bed. How many couples that you know are miserable because they, you know, it's 9:30, it's 10 o'clock, it's midnight. They got two neurons left. And rather than, you know, having a conversation with their spouse or praying together or just, you know, hanging out, it's she's going to fall asleep to a book while he falls asleep to sports or vice versa or whatever it is, you know? And it's like, but instead like, of the bed being a place of, you know, physical and spiritual and emotional intimacy, it just becomes a place where you kind of collapse, you know, and you know, maybe at the same time before you get up and run the rat race again. If we really want our house to be a domestic church, we really want our kids to be saints, then we have to get really serious on how we prioritize and use our space and what kind of a rhythm of prayer and rhythm of life we instill into our family. Most of the time, I think as parents, we just end up surviving rather than thriving. Mm. And that's our fault.
Yeah, that doesn't give God credit for what he's created.
Not at all. I mean, and he created us for community, but he created us to work. More importantly, he created us to rest so we can work, not work so we can rest.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The concept. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was running through my mind. I heard somebody say that, and the point of the fact that you made about not living in Christendom anymore. Mm-hmm. That book is great, From Christendom to Apostolic Mission. And it's you know, Pope Francis, right in the beginning of the book, to the Roman Curia, brothers and sisters, we no longer live, Christendom no longer exists, he said. Mm-hmm. What a stark reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's...
And I'll say this, the priests and the bishops who get it, get it.
Yes,
like the ones who have an evangelization mindset and focus and saying, we need to find new ways. John Paul II in 1978 in Catechesi Tridente, one of his first encyclicals, 1978. He said the modern church is going to need a plurality of methods if mm-hmm. we're going to reach people. That was in 1978. Mm-hmm. He said, goodness, okay, the beginning gracious. Of it. But he already foresaw prophetically, I think, that, you know, traditional CCD, traditional catechesis, yeah. it's not going to work. Like, we're mm-hmm. going to need more. We're going to need more things that can bless marriages, bless the family, more ways to break through all this noise, you know. Pope Benedict XVI, he didn't say don't use social media. He never said that. Mm. I mean, he was the first pope to have social media. He didn't say don't have it. What he said was, we need to go into the digital subcontinent with the gospel. But what he said was, before you post, you should pray. Mm. And after you post, you should pray. Mm. So he was basically saying, like, bookend any post, pray before you say something stupid.
Yeah.
And then after you post something, pray and examine and say, did that need to be said? You know, mm-hmm. am I glad I said that it was going to bless? But also just kind of protect and safeguard yourself. Like, we need, you know, to be out there. We need to put ourselves out there, you know, instead of, we can't just close our eyes and ears and shut ourselves off, pretend the world doesn't exist. We need evangelists. But we also have to understand that the terminology we use and how we share the gospel has to change because we are in a post-Christian culture. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
20 years ago, I was in a college class that was the effects of technology on society. And mm-hmm. my professor was very wise to say and to paint a picture of, this is before people texted, before there were emojis, before there was, there was chat rooms. That was basically it.
Right.
But he said that it's already taking effect on people's psychology because mm-hmm. they'll way more willingly say something that they would not to your face on a keyboard.
Yeah.
And he likened it to road rage because behind the wheel. So, I mean, you're driving a deadly machine now. And so people might act different than they would to your face, you know? And so it's just constant. It's constant now with screens. People just say whatever they want.
Yeah.
Everybody's brave behind the keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Well, they don't even use a keyboard anymore. It's a touch screen.
I'm sure you've all experienced that too. Like when someone rattles you off like a nasty email, like for work or something.
Yeah.
And if you have the wherewithal to pick up a phone and call them, or better yet, show up and look them in the eyes to see them, the difference in their tone, the difference in how non-confrontational somebody is when you actually step to them and you actually look them in the eyes and call them out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is one of those challenges as parents, is how do we teach our kids not to be reactive? You know, because it's really easy when something comes through on social media, I'm going to react to it. How do we teach them, you know what? No, virtue demands that you say nothing, or mm-hmm. virtue demands that you don't react.
Right.
It's never been harder, in my opinion, to be a parent as it is to be a parent in the modern culture with so much stuff coming at our kids so fast. And how do we kind of read and respond without reacting? How do we set them up for success? You know? And again, if we're not just praying with them, but teaching them how to pray, modeling how to pray, how to be able to take some time and to be able to just, okay, take an exhale. You're angry. It's valid, but to validate an anger, I'll validate her. It's okay. But right now, if you react, you're coming down to that same level. Like what is going to elevate you? How are you going to grow through this? You know, and let's sort this out together. You know, but oftentimes we're so not present because we're so distracted that we're not there in those moments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those are the little moments that mean everything.
My big soapbox now is to get fathers on fire for the faith, you know, because when men are going to mass and bringing their kids to church, you know, those kids are going to be lifelong followers of the Lord. So any advice you have to get men on fire for the Lord, to get them catch on and know the faith and pass it on to their kids and their wife, even for that matter?
Yeah, I'd say a couple things. For any of those guys who are not going or not engaging in the faith, it's not their thing. Hey, it's fine if you want to take them, honey, but it's not my thing. Or who are just going through the motions. I would say this to you as a brother, and not to indict, but just as a brother.
Sure.
For whatever reason, God decided you were worthy to entrust these young souls to.
Hmm.
That they're not yours. They don't belong to you. They belong to God. And even though you played a part in it, you continue to play a part in it, there's a big difference between being a father and being a sperm donor.
Mm, yeah.
And if you want to really discover what it means to be a man and a man of God, and why God made you a man, I think sometimes we just kind of take it for granted. It wasn't like God was just up there being like, you know, guy, girl. Mm-hmm. No, God, when he designed you, when he created you in your mother's womb in Psalm 139, when he consecrated you with a mission, Jeremiah 1, that when God decided to make you a man, and God already knew in his head and heart, you know, that he was going to send you children, that he did that with purpose and intentionality, and that you have a role to play that no one else can play. Mm. And that if you are willing to be humble enough to go before God and ask God, why did you entrust these young souls to me, to my care, to my protection, to my direction, God will put an answer on your heart. And yeah. And he will lead you back to himself to realize that your unwillingness to go, or you're begrudgingly going, you're going through the motions, sends a very deadly message to your kids when it comes to the faith. Mm-hmm. However, consequently, conversely, if you enter into your faith with humility and with joy and with zeal, you, long after you are in the ground, your life will echo and resound in the lives of your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids, because you will, as a man, have given them an invaluable gift of understanding that there is a God and it ain't you. And that when storms come, and they will, that even though their boat might take on water, it ain't going to capsize. And I think what's also difficult is when a husband has been shamed or been scolded or by, for instance, like a wife who rightly calls him out, like, why aren't you coming to mass? Why are you up praying the 18 stations with your buddies? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think that doesn't work well. Like, you know, the wife as the partner can call us out. But what works even better, at least I've found for a guy, is when guys call you out. Yeah. Is when a brother calls you out, you know? So, I mean, I would watch, like, you know, it would be at a game for school or something, and I'm talking to one of the other dads, and he's like, you know, she's riding me about getting to mass again, and da-da-da-da. He had every reason in the world why he couldn't go to mass. And, you know, I could have been like, yeah, you know, boy, what a pain the wife is. And like any other guy, right?
Sure.
All that does is crap on the sacrament and shame his wife and shame my wife, and really. Mm. But instead, me being able to turn to him and, you know, as a guy, like as a brother, squaring up, looking him in the eyes and being like, you realize that she's right, right? Mm. Like, you're really phoning it in right now. And I love you, but I'm going to speak truth to you, dude. You need to get off your butt and get to church, mm-hmm. because your kids need to see you going. And if you don't want to do that, realize that you're like, this is detrimental to them. You know, and to be able to call them out. And when a guy calls out a guy, it's just very different than when a wife calls out a guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think that all of us as dads, we owe it to each other. You know, it says Proverbs says, you know, iron sharpens iron. We owe it to each other to hold each other accountable, even if that's an awkward conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. You know, like, because if we don't, then we both suck.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think you articulated what it means to be a man. Like, I'm pumped, man.
Yeah.
We've had Steve Ray on, we've had Tommy Calloway on, and other people. Like, I'm ready to go, man. Like, that's the mission, men. Like,
that's
right. Like,
that's it.
That's what we need to do.
Well, I mean, it's a gut punch whenever you think, okay, the foundation that I lay for this person, my kids, is what they're going to build their faith on, what they're going to build their lives on. And if I'm a crummy foundation layer, then I'm setting them up for failure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, you know, even if your kids are like, oh, there my dad's again to go do this show. Oh my gosh, I'm so on board. Even if they did that, do you know what's really, and I hope they do. You know, what's really cool? They know this matters to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And eventually, what matters to dad will matter to me.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? My dad did not have to train me and teach me how to love. Like, so I did my undergrad in Notre Dame. I was raised like in a Rudy type house. There was only one team we watched. It was the only team that mattered. He didn't have to teach me how to love them. I watched his love for them, and then I fell in love with them.
Sure.
And the more I fell in love with them, then I wanted to know about their history and their players and their championships. I wanted to follow them. That's how I ended up going there. Like, I fell in love with it because my dad loved them.
Sure. That's a great analogy.
Same rule applies, man. Like, if you want your kids to love your team. Right. So what do? We're gonna buy the jerseys. We're gonna go to the game. We're never gonna miss a play. You know, we're gonna DVR. We're gonna watch it together. Whatever's gonna happen. But it's just contagious. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't use the word contagious during COVID. It's enthusiastic, right?
You did.
But if we're that way about our faith, you know, like not like, oh, we got to check the box. Like your kids are, you could sit your kids down and open up John 6 mm-hmm. and walk them through the apologetics of why we believe that Jesus is in the Eucharist and why we believe that's his body, blood, soul, and divinity. And you can hit them here, but taking them to mass, they're going to grow to love the Eucharist when they see the way that you genuflect in and out mm-hmm. of the pew, mm-hmm. the way that you bow before you receive, the way that you enter into prayer after you receive in the Eucharistic meditation time, the way that your eyes stay laser focused during the consecration, like, you know, like how important it is, like when they hear mom and dad went to the chapel for the holy hour of adoration, that's where they're going to learn to love the Eucharist. Amen. That's what's going to be caught, and that's what they're going to remember long after you're gone.
Not by words, but by example.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They
don't. And then eventually, I mean, it helps. The apologetics have helps because eventually they're going to want to know where that comes from, and then you're like, let dad drop some wisdom on you. Tell you right now. You know? But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's. I mean, we're blessed. We're blessed to have people like Father Calloway, Steve, mm-hmm. Father Mike Schmitz doing great stuff.
Sure.
I mean, top podcast in the world, doing great stuff.
Yeah.
Great mm-hmm. dude. But at the end of the day, and Father Mike, I mean, we're friends. Like he would want me to say this. Like at the end of the day, he can't walk with your kid when they get an F on a test or they strike out in the game or someone bullies them online.
Right.
You do. You have to. You know, and that's why God entrusted that soul to you. And I don't think as parents we look at kids as gifts enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we look at them as expensive. We look at them sometimes, you know, sometimes as burdensome, even though they're not. But do we really just sit back at night and just say, Lord God, I don't know why you called me to this?
Mm.
But thank you. I think that's the prayer of St. Joseph. I think that's the prayer that when Mary fell asleep in Bethlehem and he's just holding this baby like the God of the universe, I think his prayer that night was like, God, why me? Mm-hmm. Like, why me? I'm nothing special. Like, why me? You know? And God's like, because I looked at the entire planet, every dude on the planet, and I picked you, Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one I want to model manhood and holiness for my only son on earth. And likewise, because of our baptism, our sacraments, for any guy listening to this or watching this, he's like, hey, I looked at every dude on the earth and I decided I was going to entrust this soul or these souls to you. So what are you going to do about it?
Amen.
It reminds me of Fulton Sheen's quote about, look, if we're living in terrible times and you're alive in it, God chose you in this time. Don't get down.
Yeah.
This time to get up.
Yeah.
Seize the day. And honestly, if reading about the saints or church history teaches us anything, it's two things. One, some of the greatest saints we'll ever have in the church are currently atheists. They don't even believe yet.
Hmm.
And two, that no matter who's listening to this and how bad you think you are, read about the saints, okay?
Mm.
God made saints out of far worse people than you are, no matter what you're doing. He made saints out of rapists and out of mass murderers and out of con men and alcoholics and drunkards and prostitutes. He made them saints because they opened their heart to him and they worked with him, right, with the Holy Spirit. So no matter how far gone anybody thinks they are, any man or woman as a parent or an adult, you're not. There were far worse people that now have the title saint in front of me.
I just hear that echoing in my head. He doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called.
Yeah.
So no matter how bad you are.
Yep. And not even just made them convert. They not even get them holy. They became saints. That's a whole new level.
Yeah,
right. From
where to where? Whoa, God can do anything. Nothing's impossible for God. It's...
Yep.
I mean, Saint Moses the Black was a gang leader. Saint Olga. Go read about Saint Olga. She literally was a mass murderer. She murdered hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Paul.
Augustine. Yeah. Big person. Yeah.
David.
Yeah.
King David. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just you go through the list. Yeah. They weren't the most saintly people.
Yeah. How about Peter?
Yeah.
There you go.
Good night.
Mm-hmm. He's my favorite because he always puts his foot in his mouth. That's me. You know, so.
It's true.
So, just ask my wife.
How can we help you? You know, you've got an apostolic mission life. How can we help? What can we do? I mean, we've asked what we can do, to help encourage men. You're the average of the five people you hang around, right? So you definitely got to get around good people. I'm thinking this because I'm sitting here with you and You're bringing up my average, man.
I think every
let that.
I think every man. Wait a minute.
Let him answer.
Yes, really. He's like, what the crap? What just happened? That was a drive. That was a drive by.
I didn't think you would get it. Honestly,
it took me a second. Wait a minute.
Honestly, you know what? I'd say two things. For me personally, I would love it. I would love any intercessory prayer from you guys or anybody watching. And we all just got to pray for each other. We just have to. But I'll say that, you know, the more, and you know this, like, okay, it says in Romans 7:21, when you seek to do good, evil will be at hand, right? Mm-hmm. When you seek to do good, evil will be at hand. If you're trying to live for the Lord, you're painting a bullseye on your back, right?
Yeah.
And the more and more you say yes to any ministry efforts, it's not like anything I do is more important than anything you do. Like, we're all living the same thing. It's like Nehemiah. We're all building the wall. We're just building different sections of the wall.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Right? But I'd say, I wish someone would have told me, I've been doing this for a long time now, I wish someone had told me the amount of spiritual attack.
Yes.
Which is very real, just very real.
Very.
The amount of spiritual attack that comes with saying yes to the Lord, mm-hmm. you know? And I, so just for a covering, you know, just a covering over my family and home and yeah. sacrament and our ministry, you know, Life Team, like I really believe, you know, people look at youth ministry all wrong. They, you know, like, especially during the pandemic, there are parishes that are, you know, they're struggling, dioceses are struggling, and the first thing they're cutting, you guys, they're cutting their youth ministers, they're cutting their youth programs, they're cutting their youth offices because they're seen as non-essential, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's like the dumbest thing we could possibly do as a church. Don't get me going on a soapbox, but like,
yeah.
if you don't invest in your future,
right.
you're not going to have a future.
Right.
Ministry is not an expense; it's an investment.
Right.
And if you want to have, if you're worried about your parishes consolidating and shrinking and stuff, you know what you're going to need? You're going to need priests.
Yeah.
You're going to need holy moms and dads. You're going to need sisters. Yeah. Where are those going to come from? From the youth, from the next generation. So I'd say just a prayer of covering over just myself and my family. That's the first thing. The second thing, this is more of a personal favor than it is like anything else. Go make out with your wives.
All right.
I'm saying this in all seriousness. Like, you know, you guys have 18 kids. You know how to do that stuff. No, but in all seriousness, like, our kids, like, they're growing up in a porn pandemic. They're growing up in a video game culture. They're growing up where everything is virtual.
Yeah.
Our kids have never needed more to see passionate, zealous, flirty, excited marriages. They need to see moms and dads holding hands. They need to see them kissing it if it grosses them out.
Yeah.
They need to see their mom and dad take seriously their nuptial union and their sacrament. They need to see their dads, for lack of a better term, court their moms again, date their moms again, move heaven and earth to make time for their moms again. They need to see them cuddling up on the couch. They need to see them off in the corner on the couch talking. They need to see holy conversation. They need to see the flirting. They need to see it. They need to see it modeled, because what they've been given is an artificial, in my opinion, an artificial image of what modern man is. And if we don't counter that really intentionally as men who are believers and sons of God, the porn culture is going to win.
And we
have to counter what that lie is with what the reality and the beauty of the sacrament is. So if there's hurt there between, like, you know, you and a spouse, get over it. Go to reconciliation, ask for forgiveness, start over. But for the love of God, don't sit on your butt.
Yeah.
Like, our kids need the grace of the sacrament. And no matter how hard a year it's been, the grace of the sacrament is always stronger than we are. So we need to tap into it and unleash it. And honestly, if our kids get uncomfortable because their parents kiss so much, praise be God. That's a great problem.
Yeah,
because you're because your daughter, you're going to bring home the guy you are or the guy that you were.
Yes.
Yeah.
My wife and I went on a date last night. It was crazy. All the kids are like, they were got really excited that we were leaving. I'm like, okay, so you're going to be like watching TV, video games. What are you going to do? They were pumped that we were going on a date. We come back home. The house is clean. Everybody's happy. There was no problems. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Like, you know, and they were totally pumped. I'm like, wow, this is a grace right there.
Good for you, man. We shared this in the book. There's this moment when my wife and I, like, it was, I can't remember, it was like a Saturday morning or something, for no reason, but we were like in the kitchen and we had coffee, we were talking. And it was one of those really cool moments she's having as husband and wife. And we just kind of started kissing, and we were kissing pretty passionately. My youngest daughter, she's like 6 at the time, I think, comes around the corner. She's like, ew, gross. And rolling the eyes, the deep exhale, ew, all that stuff. and I just, I looked at her and I said, go upstairs and get your piggy bank. She says, why? I said, go upstairs and get your piggy bank. She goes upstairs, gets her bank, she brings it downstairs to the kitchen. She says, I said, get in the car. She says, where are we going? I said, get in the car. So she gets in the car and we drive, you know, down a few miles down the street to the store, her favorite, you know, store. It has all the girly clothes and the blingy purses and the sequin and all that stuff. She was a very girly girl, right? Stuffed animals. We go to the store and I said, pick out a sleep mask. She says, why? I said, pick out a sleep mask. So she goes and picks out a sleep mask and I make her go to the thing. I make her pull out her money, hand it to the cashier. We get in the car. She said, why'd you make me buy a sleep mask? And I looked at her before I turned the car on. I said, sweetheart, here's the reality. Your mom is a beautiful woman. She gets more beautiful every year. And I'm going to keep kissing your mom because someday you're moving out and she's not. So if you don't like it, wear your sleep mask. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. And it was drove home. And I'll tell you what, she's never said ooh since. Never.
He's fantastic.
I love it. That's awesome.
Oh, man.
It seems like all the awesome dads, I've got six daughters, all the awesome dads have this amazing story about something like this with their daughter. Steve Ray, I can just see him, you know, squealing sideways, and it's like, you want to date my daughter? You're about to die.
Yeah.
Something about it, man. I just love it. I love it. That's great, great. But you're being real with them and just creative and spontaneous. And I always keep my kids guessing. Always.
Yeah, you do.
They never know what's going to happen.
I've been thinking this whole time that every guy, every dude needs to be watching this episode. Our wives need to watch that last segment. You know,
yes, you know, it's so funny, though. Whenever someone's like, oh, you know, the church is boring or living the Christian faith is boring, or Catholic, I don't understand that. Yeah. I've never said it. If you're living a life led by the Spirit, it's not a merry-go-round, it's a roller coaster.
It's an adventure.
I mean, like, if you wake up in the morning and you're just like, look, God, okay, if you woke up this morning, that means God ain't done with you yet. You got breath in your lungs, he's not done with you yet. And your whole life becomes a mission field, and it becomes really exciting. Like, how are you going to grow me in virtue today, God? I don't always like it, but it's always exciting. Hey, who are you going to bring in my life today, God, that you know, that needs you? Or how are you going to challenge me to be a better man today? You know, like, that's kind of cool. And to be able to sit at the end of the day before you drift off to sleep and kind of do that daily examination and go, okay, like, where did I suck today?
Yep.
And where did I not? And have I improved from yesterday? I actually, this moment with my wife at one point, I actually wrote up a daily examination. And this is, I'm not suggesting everybody do this, but it was, we were going through a really hard patch in our marriage, and I was just more reactive, and I wasn't really I wasn't listening very well, and I wasn't communicating well. And I saw it was taking a toll, like, on our friendship and stuff. And I was like, okay. So I wrote this daily examination, and it was like a checklist of like 20 things. It was like, hey, you know, was I gentle today? Did I listen to you today? Did I validate you today? Did I support you today? You know, was I cool with the kids today? And I printed up like 100 copies of it. And for like several months, we would, like, before we go to bed at night, we'd go sit on the couch and I would hand it to her. I'd let her grade me on how I did that day.
Ouch.
It was humbling, man. It was humbling. But I'll tell you something. It was in a hard season, even though it was a punch in the gut for a while. It really blessed our marriage and it blessed our relationship. And it continues to this day to help make me a better father and a better husband, because it forced me to pull out of my work, to pull out of my day, and to be really present to conversations, present to the sacrament, present to the domestic church. And it's just an exercise that I'd say, like, you know, I really, if anybody's going through a hard season or having a hard time communicating, it's not working well, I would really recommend it. But even if it's not something like that, doing like a daily examination where you can look back at your day and go, how have I done today, Lord? There's in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21, there's a great, those 13 verses, 12, 13 verses, there's a great little examination that St. Paul gives us. He's kind of like saying, hey, don't do this and don't do this and do this and do this. So Romans 12, 9 through 21, if you're ever looking for something to try at the end of the day, grab your Bible out of your nightstand. There's not one in my nightstand. There should be one in your nightstand or on your nightstand. Grab the thing, but work through it. It's really it's a great starting point. But how are we going to get better if we don't hold ourselves accountable and if we don't have brothers to hold us accountable?
Mm-hmm. What a terrifying idea.
A good one. But you know, you're right.
It reminds me of a couple of things. One is you're asking the question. So I would just say simply, she had to recognize you were trying to work on yourself in your marriage. And there's just got to be tons of appreciation for that.
I'm sure there were some days that she on purpose didn't leave a certain check mark on her.
The printer's out of toner. I couldn't print one today. Yeah, more than a few. But you know what? But to that point, though, think about this. If we as husbands don't go to our wives and say, where can I improve? Mm. Then do you know what that subconsciously, you know, non-verbally suggests? That I got it all figured out. I'm awesome. I have a picture of awesome. And everything wrong here is on you.
Yeah.
Ooh. But if we actually go and say, hey, how can I improve? And we've got the guts to do it and to allow them to be honest and be validated, to your point, you're like, well, at least he's not phoning it in. I mean, I know my girlfriend's husband's phoned it in, and she's always telling me about it. Because, like, do we think that our wives aren't talking about this stuff?
That's all
they talk about, which is awesome. They should. You know, it's that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. But oftentimes, you know, our pride is just too strong. You know, pride is the only poison we should swallow.
Mm. I mean, it's a scary thing to do, but at the same time, what a courageous thing to do.
Courageous and humbling.
I mean, it's scary to think about. It's sort of like, oh, God, I don't want to tell her. Tell me what's I've been doing
wrong.
She's
a teacher, so watch out. So
my wife doesn't forget anything. You know?
She's like, oh, I've got a red pen, honey. You know what's funny? But you use the word courageous. That's exactly the right word. We confuse bravery and courage. Bravery is not courage. Courage is a Christian virtue. Hmm. Courage stems forth as a gift and fruit of the Spirit. The word courage comes from the Latin cor and agere. Core heart, like corazón, like your heart, and agere, a willingness to act. The word courage means a willingness to act from your heart. Mm. So it doesn't mean that you're not afraid. It means you refuse to be mastered by your fear, and you let your heart lead the way.
Mm. Love
it. So that's the perfect word to use for
that. Mm-hmm. On the point of having that conversation and handing over that questionnaire, there's a book by Patrick Lencioni, a secular author, but the five dysfunctions.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, five dysfunctions of a team. You know, you got to have that foundation of trust. And if you don't, you have artificial harmony because you fear conflict. And you can't fear that conflict. And you just work your way right up to the end, which is the results. And you don't pay attention to results because of your ego. So it goes right back to selfishness. I missed a couple rungs on the pyramid there, but I just recommend it to everybody. A friend of mine, Chris Bartlett, with Next Level Ministry and Ablaze Ministry out of College Station, Texas, they're all about it. Like their team, if it ain't working, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And for me, I recommend that book for people for marriages. Like, you got to trust each other. It's okay.
Yeah.
If you trust each other, you won't fear conflict. Let's get it out. Let's talk about
Communicate.
It.
Communicate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Communicate. Mm-hmm.
Trust is the result of knowing that you are loved.
Huh.
Trust is the result of knowing you're loved.
Hang on, if there's mistrust, I'm gonna drop this for you.
I'm putting you in the encounter videos because you mentioned that through Adam and Eve, Noah, Abraham, Moses, David, the trust of God, right there. Yeah. Yep.
It's great.
But again, if your spouse doesn't trust you, that begins with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's just a hard pill to swallow. But it's true.
It is. Yeah. We've definitely had a great conversation. I could talk to you all day long. Now we got to go do stuff, right?
No, I'm about to go to the fridge and grab a beer and just like, all right, let's hang out. This is great.
Going. I'd like to say any advice, but never mind. This whole show is full of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not full of it. It's full of advice.
No, we're full of it. Yeah, this guy's awesome. Yeah.
Where can people find you, Mark?
Yeah, you know what? You can go to Bible Geek, BibleGeek.com. That would have links to the bottom of my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. There's some blogs on there. There's a bunch of free videos on there.
Is there a link to your book?
Take it. Resources. Yeah, I don't actually, that book's not up on there yet, but if you go to Ave Maria Press or if you go to Amazon, cool. It's on Amazon now. But yeah, that book and any of the books. We write books for all different things, you know. So I've written books for adults, I've written books for teens, if you're that parent, you're like, "Hey, I should know all these answers to the faith, but I don't know." There's a book for that. "Hey, I go to mass, but I don't know what the heck is going on." I have a book for that. I need something to give to my kid who's going through confirmation, or I'm a sponsor. There's a book for that. So I'm just kind of trying to build my little section of the wall, do what I'm being called to do, and just try to make it a little easier lifting for parishes, for parents, you know what I mean, for catechists. Just, you know, it's it it's not impossible to translate the gospel to the next generation. It just takes looking at it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for you. Ask Teresa Tomio the same question I want to ask you today.
Oh, did Teresa have a good answer? Because she's wicked smart. She's
yeah,
a
great friend, yeah. So, sorry, okay. I shouldn't have prefaced it.
You shouldn't have.
So no pressure. We've got our RCI retreat tomorrow. And what could you give them for some advice coming into the church?
You know what? The church, like Jesus, is human and divine. Okay? The church, like Jesus, is human and divine. Divine in her teaching, but human in her makeup, right?
Yeah.
And once you come into the church, you're going to see the church, who's the bride of Christ, without all of her makeup on. You know, when you when you wake up next to your wife and it's third trimester and she is in a lot of, she's not feeling good and she's got, you know, messed up hair and bad breath and there's no makeup and that kind of a thing, and you love her more because Amen. You see what she's, you see the sacrifice, right? That when you get into the church, you get into the family, you know, on the outside, sometimes it's just, wow, it's such a beautiful thing. And it is a beautiful thing in her teachings and her theology. It's just in her divine splendor. But you get into the church and you start to see the bride a little differently. You can look at that third trimester, wake up in the morning, as a hot mess or as a hot mess, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with the church, that when you get in, you're going to see things that are going to turn your stomach sometimes. You're going to see some of the sin, you know, of a leadership. You're going to see the sin, you know, of her members. You're going to hear a homily. You're going to read a book. You're going to see a video. You're going to, you know, you're going to be offended by someone at a parish, whatever. Don't ever let that humanity pull you away from his divinity. The cross makes that humanity redeemed, and it even makes it beautiful. It makes our own humanity beautiful. So just focus on becoming a saint yourself, and everything else will work out. But there's always a beauty to the church, even in those moments, in those situations where she's not that beautiful.
Amen.
I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah,
what a great message.
Gold. I'll hand wonderful. You your report card when I compare it to Teresa Tomio.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. I'm really thankful for you guys. Thanks for, you know, you don't have to do this. You've always got your hands full. You got jobs. You've got marriages. You've got a bunch of kids. But you're using your gifts and your talents and your space and your time, which is your greatest commodity, and you're being faithful and you're doing this. So I know that heaven rejoices over this, and I'm thankful for you guys as brothers. I really am.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And those points, you'll get those prayers.
Yeah.
You'll absolutely. Get those prayers. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Sincerely, I appreciate that.
Well, Mark, thanks again for joining us. Yeah. And we'll, if you want to support our mission, please subscribe to this channel. Click on that bell, notification bell, to let us to let you know of new content that we're coming out. And in the meantime, be real.
Be bold.
Be Catholic. God bless.